The gospel lesson for today comes from the book of Matthew, chapter 25, verses 14 through 30. For it is as if a man, going on a journey, summoned his slaves and entrusted his property to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, to each according to his ability. Then he went away. The one who had received the 5 talents went off at once and traded with them and made 5 more talents. In the same way, the one who had received the 2 talents made 2 more talents. But the one who had received the 1 talent went off and dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those slaves came and settled accounts with them. Then the one who received the 5 talents came forward, bringing 5 more talents, saying, "Master, you have handed over to me 5 talents. See, I have made 5 more talents. His master said to him, "Well done, good and trustworthy slave. You've been trustworthy in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master." And the one with the 2 talents also came forward, saying, "Master, you handed over to me 2 talents. See, I've made 2 more talents. His master said to him, "Well done, good and trustworthy slave. You've been trustworthy in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master." Then the one who had received the 1 talent also came forward, saying, "Master, I knew that you were a harsh man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you did not scatter seed. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here, you have what is yours." But his master replied, "You wicked and lazy slave, you knew, did you, that I reap where I did not sow and gather where I did not scatter? Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and on my return I will receive what was my own with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to the one with the 10 talents. For to all those who have will be given more, and they will have an abundance. But from those who have nothing, even what they have will be taken away. As for this worthless slave, throw him into the outer darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Please be seated.
Today in the service, we had one of those kind of disconnect, jarring type moments. The end of the gospel reading was, "Take him and throw him into the outer darkness where there is weeping and gnashing of teeth." And we say the word of the Lord, and what do you say? Thanks be to God. A little bit of a disconnect there, right? What do they say? Cognitive dissonance? It doesn't quite jive. At text study this week, one of the pastors came right out and said, "I don't like this story. I wish Jesus had never told it. It's so negative, it just induces fear into people." And I thought, well, you look at it, 2/3 of the parable are about unexpected grace and overflowing generosity, and 1/3 of it is about fear. So I guess this guy who doesn't see things as 2/3 full, the glass is 1/3 empty. It kind of raises the question, why does Jesus talk this way, though? Why does he use this kind of judgmental, harsh language, this confusing type language? Well, a couple reasons. The first reason is our attention. How do you catch people's attention? You have to do something that grabs that attention, right? Something that startles them into paying attention, and Jesus was a master communicator, and he did that. You know, if Rush Limbaugh came on his show and said, "You know, this last week, I think the president made kind of a mistake. It wasn't a big mistake, it was a little mistake. And I'm sure once somebody points it out, he's going to correct it, but if he doesn't, we could have some negative consequences for our country." How many people would listen to that guy? None. He's a master communicator, and so how does he get attention? He says, "This last week, the president made the worst decision in the history of our country, and it's going to mean the ruin of America within a year." Same with those magazines, you know, you see at the end of the checkout counters, right, at the supermarkets. Who's going to buy one of those magazines if it says, "Kim Kardashian got into a little misunderstanding with one of her friends, and for a while it was kind of tense, but then they worked it out, and now they're best buddies"? No one would read that, right? Instead, you want to read, "Kim Kardashian got into a knockdown, dragout, hair-pulling fight with somebody, and they're never going to speak again." That's what sells. Jesus isn't quite at that level, but he knows what gets our attention. The second thing about this is Jesus has a message that he's passionate about, he cares about. He knows that what he is telling people will affect their life and affect it for the better, and he wants people to pay attention to it, to think about it, to engage with it, and actually make a change in their life so they can enjoy what he's talking about. And so you look at this harsh language and you can look at it two ways, depending on the motivation. Suppose you had a friend who was abusing alcohol and you were really concerned. You could come to that friend and say, that alcohol is evil and you're a sinner for drinking this way and God is punishing you because of your drinking. How effective is that? Not at all, right? But you could come to your friend with the same concern and say, I'm concerned about you. I'm concerned about how your abuse of alcohol is so negatively impacting all the close relationships in your life. And I'm worried about your consumption of alcohol. It's going to absolutely ruin your health if you keep on this way. Both show concern, both act for a change, and both say that this is serious. We need to pay attention. So let's look at this story that Jesus told. It starts out, as all encounters with God start out, with just grace, with overflowing generosity, surprising generosity. It said an owner was going to go on a trip, a rich landowner, and he called his servants together and he gave them money. A nice chunk of change, just gave them money. What an incredible thing. His money for them to use. What would your reaction be if somebody came up to you and said, here's a big chunk of change. Use it for a while. I'll be back, but have some fun with it. Would you be energized? I'd be energized. My brain would be thinking, what could I do with that kind of money? You know, it's a cliche, the old strategic planning technique. You know, you want to get people thinking out of their comfort level on a different level. You say to them, suppose somebody gave you $1 million just out of the blue to spend. What would you do with it? It's supposed to spark creativity, engage you in possibilities. Well, two of the guys then took this wonderful, wonderful opportunity, and they used it. They traded with the money. And here's the second incredible thing. They got a good return on it. They didn't lose it. In fact, they doubled their money. Where in this economy can you invest your money and be guaranteed of doubling it? Nowhere. Nowhere legal, right? If somebody says they can double your money, you're saying, are you a good friend of Bernie Madoff? But here, unexpectedly, overwhelming generosity was just given to them. They used the master's money and it just doubled. The third incredible thing is when they actually were able to share this with the master, that look, we took the resources that you gave us, and we used them, and we doubled them, and here it is. What is the reaction? It is joy. The master says, enter into my joy. I couldn't be more thrilled. And he rewards them. And what is his bonus to them? It's not like most businesses where they give you some money and you can go off and buy a swimming pool for your backyard or a nicer car. No. He gives them more responsibility. He says, you've been faithful in something little. Now I'm going to make you faithful in a lot. They are having even more opportunity to have an impact in this world with their master's money. So it's all good so far. Overflowing, surprising generosity. So, has the third servant learned the same lesson? No. He's a classic example of the best defense is a good offense, right? Because he lights right into the master. He says, I know you are a hard guy. I know you're greedy. I know you want to get something out of nothing. And I was afraid. I was afraid that if I lost this money, if I took a chance with it and lost it, I'd be in deep, deep trouble, so I buried in the ground. Now that you're back, I dug it up here. Here's your money back. What's that about? That's fear talking, isn't it? What happens when fear gets a hold of us? It isn't pretty. People tell us fear is a good adaptive reaction that human beings have used. But, you know, I think the only time fear is really good for you is if a Bengal tiger is coming and chasing you and it gets the adrenaline flowing and you can run or climb up a tree and get away. But otherwise, in every other situation, when you've acted out of fear, have the results ever been positive? No, because what does fear do? Like this guy, it grabs your heart and it narrows down the list of possibilities. You're not looking at possibilities at all. You're just hunkering down. You're just holding things close. And what happens? You just bury the money. You don't see an opportunity. The second thing fear does to you is it's so easy to project your own fears upon other people, even people who are close to you, like this master, and you start becoming paranoid about them, and you start seeing them as the enemy, and you start blaming them, and again, nothing good happens. This guy accuses the master of being hard and greedy and cruel. We have seen the master demonstrate the exact opposite. Who gives away money just with no strings attached? A generous person, a trusting person. Did he ever say to his servants who made the money, it's a good thing you made money on this because if you'd lost money, you'd be in trouble? He didn't even think about it, did he? He wanted them to use it. And in fact, when he praises them, he doesn't say, I praise you, I'm so glad because you're the smartest businessman I ever know. He says, no, you've been faithful. You've been faithful and done what I wanted in this world. So we know that none of these things that the third servant have said about this guy are true. They're just projections of his own fearful heart. And so the master says these things, take the money away from him and throw him out into the outer darkness. It sounds so cruel, but in a way, he's just confirming what had already happened, what the guy had already done to himself, right? Because the money wasn't his. It was in a hole in the ground. And he was so blinded by his fear that he couldn't see opportunity. He couldn't see the trust and joy of his master. He was already living in the darkness. What the master said just confirms it. So Jesus tells an incredible story about when he's gone away, he has something for us to do, and he's given us resources. And if we trust that and use those resources, his will is actually going to be done on this earth. And he points out that it is fear that's going to stop us from being able to accomplish that. As a pastor, as a leader of a church, I have to learn the lesson of this parable all the time. You see a church that hopefully seems pretty well run because we've got a great staff, we've got great leaders, great volunteers, and things generally go pretty smoothly. But behind the scenes, there's always something going on. There's always challenges, you know, staff will quit, get a different job, there'll be people who misunderstandings and fights and feathers that get ruffled that you need to deal with, and there's always, always financial challenges that go on. And the temptation is always to respond out of fear, to pull back and say, oh, we've got to cut back, we've got to step back, we've got don't do this, don't do that, and to be cautious. It's always fascinating to see new people on the church council, new people on staff, and when they start to observe some of the ups and the downs of a budget cycle of a church, they get panicky. And again, fear grabs them, and they're like, let's pull back, let's stop doing things, let's cut back on all this. And I have to say, we're in the faith business here. This is God's ministry. God has provided, God will provide. We need to trust, we need to act on that we're doing God's will, and God will provide. And slowly and surely, they almost always learn that lesson. It was funny, the other day, one of our staff persons said, Steve, you told me for 2 years that I needed to trust about the finances, and now I think I finally can begin to do that. Anytime I get discouraged and am tempted to act out of fear, I simply look at what God is doing in this congregation, in this place, week after week. People show up hungry for something to touch their lives, to give them guidance in their lives. People bring their babies here to be baptized and to become part of this family and part of God's work in the world. People entrust to us their loved ones who have died so that we can give them a final farewell and honor and give thanks to God when that happens. People come here and volunteer to do quilting, to serve the hungry in our community, to teach our young children, to teach confirmation-age children. It's happening all the time in so many, many ways. People are realizing that their master has entrusted them with gifts, and they are sharing those, and that's what's going on, and we don't need to be afraid. At this time of year, we take a little while to focus on the financial needs of keeping this ministry running, and we lift it up, sent you a little mailing on it, sent you a pledge card. We invite you to be thinking about that, to actually learn for yourself the lessons that Jesus is teaching in this story, to think about how richly you have been blessed and what you can do if you share a little bit of that in supporting the ministry of this wonderful, wonderful church. The temptation is always to be fearful and think, I've got all these other things, I've got so much other stuff that I need to spend this on. But we need to overcome that, because that just narrows us down. That makes us distrustful. We need to see the lesson that if we share the gifts that our Master has given us, they will double. Now, I can't guarantee you, like a lot of TV preachers, that if you give X amount of money to the church within a month, God is going to double that money for you. I can't do that. That's not how the way it works. But I can guarantee you that the money that we invest in ministry and doing God's work actually will touch lives, actually will have an impact in this world, actually will be a blessing. And we will also be able to hear what those servants in the story heard from their master. Well done, my good and faithful servants. Enter into the joy of your master, the joy that is always, always there. Amen. Please stand as we sing our next hymn.